NetFront Presence is brought to you by Closets by Design. Update your closet, garage, office, pantry, and more. Imagine your home totally organized. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
Welcome to NetFront Presence. I'm Jeff Gordon, the Post-Dispatch, joined by Matthew DeFranks in the They're Not Quite Dead Yet, But Pretty Much They Are edition of the NetFront Presence. Matthew, some guys are trying to take advantage of these last remaining games, and realistically, this is really just a head start on next season, in particular training camp.
Yeah, realistically, that's what it is. In Dreamland, there's still the chance, right? I think the other day when we were talking to Drew Bannister about Justin Falk's availability, and he says, Justin Falk, he's week to week. And so I asked, so he's done for the season, right? Like, just to be clear, he's done for the season. He goes, well, he's week to week. I mean, if our season gets extended, he could be back. And in my head, I was like, well, I mean, that's an awfully optimistic thing to be thinking right now. But I understand where coaches and players come from. You know, they're in it day to day. They can't take nights off, even this late in the season with the standings the way they are, and they go until they're done, essentially. I think we can understand from the lineups that they put together in San Jose and Anaheim and even against Chicago here, we can understand what the objective is here with playing younger guys and mixing up lines, mixing up pairs, changing up special teams units to get rookies on there. We can see where this is all going. And yesterday was, if I'm not mistaken, the first time that the Blues could have been eliminated from postseason contention officially. And they didn't. Obviously, we saw the big first period. We saw Vegas lose, and they're 3 points back with three games to go. You know, heading into last night, the Blues had 4 games left. Vegas had 5 games left. So you needed 9 tiny little miracles, right? And at the end of last night, now you need 7 tiny little miracles. So I can understand why they can't come out and say that they've given up hope and everything like that. But realistically, we're looking at a team that whose season ends next week. And you know, the interesting part about it, I guess, if they enter Dallas game 82 with still a chance, they're going to have to pack for 5 or 6 days because Dallas would be a potential round one opponent if they do somehow make this all happen.
Yeah, I mean, you know, weird things do happen at the end of the year, but not that weird. I do think it's been encouraging when you start thinking about, okay, what is the focus shifts entirely to the second track of this, you know, season, which is, you know, preparing for hopefully better times ahead. Pretty smart decision to just go ahead and dust off some guys that just haven't played much. And you have to decide, you know, who your prospects are, you know, the guys you're going to build around, you know, Bolduc's the guy you're going to build around. So it's important to play him, but it's also important to find out whether you're going to continue to go forward with some guys who are younger, but are kind of on that, you know, fringe. And you have to decide, you know, are all these guys going to have a spot in our contract list? So you need to see Alexandrov. You need to see Tucker.
Yeah, and I've liked what Tucker's brought. I mean, you know what you're going to get from him every night, and that's being physical, that's laying hits, that's dropping the gloves if he needs to. So, like, you know what you're going to get from him, and he's provided that. He's seen some time on the penalty kill. There was a game he played with Colton Parayko that were he was seeing some tougher matchups. It hasn't always been perfect. He's taken some penalties. He's gotten caught a couple times, but for the most part, he's been pretty good these last few games. And whether that translates to him being a full-time third pair defenseman in the future, I don't know, but we can look at the last, you know, 3-4 games and understand that the coaching staff and the Blues have liked what he's brought. And even last night, you know, laying a hit on Connor Bedard, I mean, he's slippery. He's tough to catch, and he caught him with a great clean hit along the boards right as the puck is leaving. And that's something that wakes up a kind of a sleepy game after that start. You know, they score 4 goals in the first 7 minutes, and after that, it was Not much going on out there. Not a lot of intensity, as Braden Shen said. So, good for him for doing that. Alexandrov, he had a tough game in Anaheim. Those last two goals in the third period, his line was on the ice for both of them, both shots from around the slot in the net front there. So, a tough game for him there. And last night he does win a battle, get a puck up to the point, and Torrey Krug eventually scores on that. So. A nice little play from Alexandrov there, and the other guys. Dean hasn't really, to me, shown a ton, but Bolduc has really been the star since elevating to the top line a few games ago.
Yeah, let's talk about Bolduc for a moment because it is exciting to see a guy that clearly an NHL shot and clearly enough speed to get up and join the rush at the NHL level. He's got a nice frame that can be built upon in terms of his he's not a 5'7" guy. He is he's a, he I think he's a right-sized frame to become a scorer. He'll be able to get stronger and fit, I think, and then really position himself well in the offensive zone. So it just seems like all the tools are there. If you put him out there with skilled guys, he's going to get some points just because he's got that skill level. Interesting to see where he's at and what you could start trying to project for him next year because they are going to need some offense from his roster spot.
Yeah, especially at his cap hit. I mean, you need production from guys on entry level deals, and that's why Jake Neighbors doing what he's doing right now is also valuable to the Blues beyond the goals that he's providing. It's doing it at a fraction of what it might cost players out of the entry level system, right? And so Zach Bolduc, what I've liked about him, even I think the San Jose game was the first game he played with Robert Thomas, and at that time Jake Neighbors. And that first period, he was on pucks. He was forechecking. He had speed going. He was making plays that weren't flashy, but you notice them. And suddenly, you notice the points in these last few games. That shot he has in Anaheim in the first 11 seconds is kind of a confident shot in a way. I mean, he has some space, but it's not a grade A opportunity by any means, right? You're shooting to get it on net, maybe get a rebound, and he ends up beating Lukas Dostal. So that's a confident play. The goal he has last night is being in the right area when Shen makes a pass to Thomas, and Thomas finds Bolduc on the back door. I mean, it's not a hard shot to score on, given from where it is, but he has to know where to go, and he was in the right position to be there for that pass, right? So he's making plays that are away from the puck that show up on the score sheet in a way. And yeah, I've liked what he's brought, and I think about this now, I guess the sad thing is he hasn't really used that one-timer on the power play a ton, and you'd like to see him, get feeds from a guy like Robert Thomas on the power play there. But the issue is they both are in that same spot. I mean, Thomas likes to go downhill from that right circle. Bolduc is a left-hand shot, so his one-timer spot would be in that right circle. So the sad part is, they're both play the same positions on the power play, so you probably won't see them out there together in their most effective positions. But the fact that Bolduc is now getting more power play time should help him in the future as well.
Yeah, and his role is even more important with, and we talked about it last week, Jimmy Snuggerud deciding to stay in college for another year, which it should be fine for him, but it does just leave a spot to be filled, on the roster for the Blues. They need to freshen things up. They've got guys who are generally, ineffective this season. They need to be replaced. Need to do that as much as possible on a budget to make the cap work. Clearly, he would have come in and played some NHL games next year. So the fact he's going to be in college until the end of the year puts a little more focus on making sure Bolduc delivers, and it also probably creates an extended leash for maybe Dvorsky as well.
Yeah, I mean, we can get to Dvorsky in a little bit because I'm really excited to see what they end up doing with him. But for Bolduc, the other thing I think about his development this year is, maybe his struggles in the AHL were kind of a blessing in disguise. When you come in out of junior, you're one of the highest scoring players in Canada, and you start in the AHL and there's nothing. You're not scoring points, you're not really creating a ton of offense for Springfield, and you have to learn to impact the game in different ways. And he's found a way to do that in the NHL at the NHL level, by being hard on the forecheck, by being in the right areas. Some of the turnovers are still there. I think there was one last night in right around the offensive blue line that went the other way. But he has been making. We talked about offensive players that have to outweigh their defensive deficiencies, and we haven't really seen a ton of defensive deficiencies from Bull Duke that he has to outweigh, right? And that's kind of a unique thing for younger players.
So much of what an offensive player has to do is, win the territorial battles to create the opportunities, just possession time, where the puck is on the ice, keeping it out of your zone. Yeah, it's great if you can back check and you're effective getting back and helping, but your job mainly is to make sure the puck is headed the other way and staying the other way. And it's so much, I mean, these rush goals you get in a free and easy game like once against the Blackhawks, that game, that's fun hockey, but most of the hockey isn't much fun. It's just territorial battles, winning battles, getting pucks in deep, sustaining pressure. And he's seemingly, Patrick Waugh pointing out he's going to have to embrace that as to make it at this level, and his junior coach, and seems like he's taking on the challenge.
Yeah, and when we talked about the style of hockey, I mean, that's one thing this year for the Blues that we've been missing. We've been missing a forecheck all season, basically. We've seen them have a rush game that can be among the best in the league. I think at certain points this season, the advanced analytics organizations and sites had their rush chances and their rush goals pretty much at the top of the league. But we've noticed a lack of sustained offensive zone time, and we can all see that. We could see that in with our eyes. We could see that with the shot totals, with the possession numbers. We can just visually and analytically see them not having much of an offensive zone possession game, and a lot of that comes from not having a forecheck. And when we talk about Boldu create finding other ways to create offense, a forecheck is a necessary part. And that was something that the Blues kind of picked up in Nashville. I know they lost that game, but they played pretty well, actually, and there was a forecheck. They had guys turning over pucks. They had time in the Nashville zone, so that was an encouraging sign from an overall perspective on finding a forecheck against a good team. And then it'll be necessary come Friday. Carolina is one of the best forechecking teams in the league, has been for a long time. They dump the puck more than almost every team, and they recover a ton. So that's a team that plays a completely different style of hockey than the Blues do. And we've seen how successful they've been for the last, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years, whatever it is.
If Carolina plays a game, like it's not a rest game, but a real game, this will be a lesson for those young guys. Because he's talking about a team with structure and skill. It's got an identity. This is what we do, to your point. This is what we do. We're really good at this. We change some parts here and there, but this is what we do under Rod Brind'Amour. And it's every shift. So this will be an, they've got some interesting tests, assuming that these teams are going to play their players. Now, you get to the end of the year, Dallas is probably going to rest everybody. But if Carolina plays its players, hey, these guys, save the video from this. Save it and look at it over the summer, because you're about to get some schooling.
Yeah, and I found it interesting, just like as we've advanced in the sport, analytically, you understand that a lot of goals come within a few seconds after entering the offensive zone. After crossing the blue line, the best chances come almost immediately after that, and not after long extended cycles. And so to know that and also see what Carolina's done playing the opposite, it's an eye-opener. And I think since Frederik Andersen's been back, they've gotten great goaltending, and if they can, capitalize on having Jake Gensel and Evgeny Kuznetsov and an actual good goaltending, they're a dangerous team. in the Eastern Conference. I mean, even though they got that swept in the Eastern Conference final last year, I mean, that was it. Those are four really tight games. Like that was not a sweep by playing standards, right? They didn't get run out of the buildings against Florida. And this year, I think they're deeper. They have probably better goaltending, and they still have that same identity that they play to.
Imagine your home totally organized. Closets by Design is offering 40% off plus an additional 15% and free installation. Schedule your free consultation today. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN for details. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
Man, having Gensel to punch in some goals he's got to make a difference as they go forward. So they'll be fun to watch. Now, getting back to the Blues, we talked about the celebration that ensued in the front office when they got Scott Prunovich to the RFA level, keep him out of an open bidding scenario. Now with Justin Falk out and Torrey Krug misses time in the game, this most recent game, Scott getting another chance because this is what the final games are for, right? Kind of assess where, this has been a difficult year for him. I mean, he's generally stayed healthy, which is a good thing, broadly speaking. Clearly has all that offensive ability, sees the ice, great passer, trouble in the defensive zone. He's got a few more games to play this year to get himself ready for the summer and get himself ready for camp. Your assessment, I know some fans are in our chat say get rid of him, sell now, but that would be selling low on a guy that could still at least provide low cost depth. Is there hope for Scott Prunovich, Matthew DeFranks?
You'd like to think so. Yeah, I mean, if he could shoot the puck a little bit more, it's no surprise he doesn't have any goals because he never looks to shoot. With a wide open chance on the power play, he won't shoot. Doing it at 5-on-5, he won't shoot. So that's probably my biggest gripe with him, outside of his defensive zone play. I mean, there are times where he looks hesitant, going to loose pucks and going into battles and looks to be avoiding contact and things like that, which subconsciously you can understand after a guy's been hurt so many times, but that's just not the way that you have to play in the NHL, right? So I have liked sometimes the passing, the vision that he brings in the offensive zone and even in transition. I mean, the play that he made in Anaheim, dropping a pass to Kyrou before the Buchnevich goal, like that's a nice pass. That's a nice play, and to be able to see that all develop, that's a good play for him. But overall, like I think we weren't surprised to see that after he hit his 74 games, he came out of the lineup immediately next game, and then he came back in as soon as the Blues decided that they were going to start playing all the young guys. And so I think there is messaging you can see there from the fact that the coaching staff basically got him to his number, and then while they were still competing, they went with other options. And then once they essentially, I don't want to say stop competing, but once they shifted focus, how about that, towards a different path, he went back in the lineup. And I still would like to see more dangerous power plays from him at the point. There hasn't been a ton of times where you see him work the point on the power play and you say, wow, this is a really good power play. They're really getting a lot of chances. They're moving the puck well, they're recovering, they're moving side to side, they're generating a lot of looks. Like you just haven't felt that way a lot about Scott when he's on the ice. Still do love what he can bring with subtle different moves to open up guys, but it just hasn't been enough. And I think when I've talked to Scott in the past, he said that he hasn't played up to his standard this season, and I think the Blues probably feel the same way.
Yeah, in terms of the offensive stuff, he just needs to look at Torrey Krug. Torrey doesn't have a missile, but he will shoot for deflections. He will put some shots on goal. He's not expecting to score a lot of goals. He's not Al MacInnis, but he'll put some pucks in there. You have to.
Yeah, like last night he
Yeah.
puts the puck on that.
And he gets a goal. I mean, it's regrettable, probably not going to beat a lot of good goalies in good games, but nonetheless, it found its way through. And you create something with it. Create something with it. I mean, if you're just a non-issue, the way Robert Thomas once upon a time was, who's completely embraced the shot mentality, which is, to his vast credit, this is a, he was Joe Thornton all over again, and only just more, even more maddening at times when he just refused to look. Well, now he's looking and he's scoring. And Prudovich can get some results offensively by just looking to the net, creating a rebound, creating a deflection. Even with his ability to move and change his shot angle from, and go in, he might be able to get in and score in tight too. So he's got all that ability. If he's not going to shoot it from the point that he needs to go down low and set up down there out of with a non-shooting angle and then feed somebody who does have a shooting angle, which I don't think he would be uncomfortable doing, going down and operating down low behind the net even. But he's got to figure it out. I think his exit interview will be interesting, right? I would like to see a tape of that. We won't get one, but it will be interesting.
Yeah, and I'm curious to see what the actual contract looks like this summer. If they do tender him a qualifying offer, and which they did all this work to keep him an RFA, it would seem that they want to keep his rights, right? But he does have, he's 17 points this season. He's 25 years old, so like, that's not going to be a lead minimum contract is what I'm saying. Like he's on a lead minimum this year. What is that, $1 million? I don't know, but is that a palatable number for the Blues? And the other part is like, let's see what they end up doing with Torrey Krug. Is Krug's decision different this summer if it's a different team other than Philadelphia? I mean, he's been a healthy scratch now. Like he was scratched in San Jose. And while Drew Bannister said he would be back in the lineup the next night, someone else would come out. That's still something for a veteran player saying, well, I can read what it says on the walls. I can understand what they're trying to do. Now, is Perunovic even actually a step up from Krug? I don't know. But is the decision different for Krug this summer where you have 1 year fewer left in the contract, you might have a different destination, and you have the organization that has actually healthy stretch in favor of future prospects.
Yeah, and the Blues have played him enough on the power play in particular, where he's demonstrated he's made a recovery from where he was a year ago. It's just, but then if you look at what the team has done 5-on-5 when he's been out there, it's like, yeah, but that's, that's a joint effort, admittedly. But yeah, 5-on-5 play. Matt DeFrank's haunted by this team's 5-on-5 play. He said to watch a lot of bad 5-on-5 play. When you look at the thing about Scott, though, before we move on, is that they're just without any options, really, internally. It's not like they have guys that are on the cusp that are, going to come in and be able to give them low-cost minutes on the blue line. With some upside, some projection that's not there. It's kind of like for another year, you almost have to keep him just for the cost factor. Even if he's at 1.1 or 1.2 million, that's still pretty cheap. Your option is to go out and get somebody who's older at the end to do the same thing, I suppose, but you're trying to get younger. I don't know. This seems like for 1 year anyways, given the lack of depth behind him in the organization, it seems like they're kind of stuck with the maintaining their investment.
Yeah, I think down the line, you'd hope the Blues probably hope that Michael Buchinder can become kind of a player that can contribute offensively in the NHL. But he'll just be turning pro next year. And as a defenseman, you're not expecting a 20-year-old to turn pro in the AHL and make the jump to successful power play two quarterback, right? But he would fit kind of that mold. I'm not sure what the team wants to do with Theo Lindstein. He is signed to an entry-level contract, and because he is a first-round pick drafted out of Sweden, he can come over and play in the AHL. Like, they do have that right to bring him over, just like they had the right for Dalibor Dvorsky to put him in the AHL this year. They just decided to put him in the OHL instead. So now that Lindstein is signed, I wonder if there is something in the works for next year, what they end up doing with him. And if they do end up bringing him to North America, which I don't know, he still hasn't played a ton in the SHL over there. He's played a lot in Allsvenskan, the second tier league over there. So it's not like he'd be going from top league in Sweden to the AHL. So maybe they give him more time there. But if you can get guys going and on the back end, Bouchinger, Lundstein, and Leo Louf had his first year in North America this year. Different type of player entirely, but those would be the guys on defense that you have capable of stepping in on the blue line, I guess.
If Louf does make it to the NHL, we got to make sure we get Jim Thomas there for his first game.
Yeah.
JT would have to see there, come in and see him. It's his boy there.
I
Before
think
we get to
JT might be on the or already be on the ice for the rookie lap.
yeah, there you go. There's like a, just a surrogate parent there for him. So before we get to Dvorsky, I know you want to hit on that. All year they've been. I noticed in particular that Drew Bannister has been willing to, be positive about Kevin Hayes. And we all love Kevin Hayes; he's a great dude and a great guy to talk to. And his story's inspiration, dealing with what he had to with his brother and how his family has taken that head on and so forth. It's been tough, and he's got some term left, even with you're only picking up half of it. He gets sent a message. Matt, are you kind of wondering about, going forward? You know where this team is. You know what it's trying to do. He's got time left. You're the cap guy. What can you do with him? With you're only paying half of his freight, but still, it's still a chunk.
Yeah, I mean, it's a chunk that he's probably not earning this year, right? I mean, he's got 29 points in 77 games, 3.1 million. I mean, it's not really good enough for a third line center, right? And I think he's been a little bit miscast in St. Louis as a big physical presence because he is a big guy. I mean, he's a big man, but that's not his game. He's a vision and playmaking guy, because he has to be. He can't make up for it with his foot speed out there. So, yeah, it's been a disappointing year for Kevin Hayes. I mean, he had flashes early on. I mean, even on that road trip to the East Coast, that game in Boston where that line was fantastic, was a bright spot. But it's just been not a very good year for him. And he, I mean, he's not someone who's like untouchable for, I'm not breaking any news there by saying that, he's not someone the Blues are building around. He's, I think when they brought him in, he's a bridge, right? He was someone who's supposed to make this team competitive as they go from one, core to the next, era essentially, right? He was meant to be a bridge, just like Kapanen, Verana, Blais were all supposed to be, the stopgaps for 1 year. Just Hayes has a couple more years left. I don't know what teams out there want him on that number, or if the Blues are willing to retain for, 2 more years after this. So it is a little bit interesting that they chose to scratch a guy that has some term left rather than guys like Kapanen and Blais, who are going to be UFAs this summer, right? Because you have to, if you're not going to trade Hayes, you have to work with him and get whatever you can out of him across the life of his contract. So we'll see, I guess, what happens in the last 3 games with how he deals with it and how the Blues deal with it. But yeah, kind of an underwhelming season for Kevin Hayes, and I'm sure the Blues are kind of thinking the same.
All right, what an uplifting finish here. Dalibor Dvorsky, again, so much of what this team is going to try to sell fans and really themselves and the group internally is that there are better times coming. I got a highly productive player in the O. He had a little taste of playing against men in Sweden, didn't go as well, but he certainly did fine on the big stage against men his age or players his age on the world level. Your thoughts on realistically, do we start overselling Dalibor, or is there any risk of that, or do you think this is the legit deal here?
I really like what he's done this year. I think you look historically at players in their draft plus 1 years, and that's what he's at right now. And the points per game production isn't at a level that he's putting up right now. Like Kyrou wasn't at that level. Thomas wasn't at that level. Like this is a guy who's producing really, really well for an 18-year-old. And just as far as news goes, he's Sudbury Wolves did win their first round series against Mississauga in 5 games. They actually start their series against North Bay tonight, seven, best of seven against North Bay. So he's still in the playoffs. I do think the Blues will get a ton more looks at him now that he's playing in North America than when he did playing in Sweden. Before it was basically, development camp after the draft. You'd see him for 4 or 5 days, and that would be basically it. But right now, they can go to Ontario. They could go watch him in the playoffs. They see him at development camp. They'll see him at the prospect tournament before the season starts. The Blues are hosting it this season, or I guess next season, with Chicago and Minnesota, and they'll be able to see him there. I mean, last year he wasn't there because he was playing in Sweden already. And so they'll see him there. They'll see him at training camp that he wasn't able to be at last year. They'll see him at preseason games that he wasn't able to be at last year. So they'll have a lot more looks at him. And I will have to double check on this, but I think that he's eligible to go play in the AHL next year. He was eligible to go play in the AHL this year because of, the SHL agreement with the NHL. And I still believe that because he was drafted out of Sweden, he would have the option to go play in the AHL, even though he is a teenager that is currently playing in the OHL. So I'll have to double check on that. But if he, there's really not much left for him to do in junior hockey. If they want to see progression, it feels like it's either the AHL or the NHL that would be best for him. And, even if he is in the NHL and he is technically on like a second line role, I think it's still a tough ask for a 19-year-old kid at that point to come in and produce at a top six rate. It's a hard league. It's the toughest league in the world. And he very well might be that guy in a few years, but as a rookie, I think the expectations should be a little tempered for him if he is in the NHL. But I would anticipate the Blues kind of giving him every chance to crack that roster in the fall.
Yeah, just put him on a hide him on the third line, which is often the fourth line. Put him on offensive zone starts, spot that line, second power play unit, maybe some first power play unit, third line, spot him. Lean hard on your fourth line for defensive zone starts. Lean on some of that element there for PK. Play the heck out of your top two lines, which you're still going to have to find more talent for. You could shelter him. You could shelter him for a year, give him, expose him, give him offensive opportunities, protect him a little bit. There's a way to do that. We've seen that in the past with guys who are a lot older than him being hidden, technically a third line, but is crunching in down there to like 11 minutes some nights. So it's doable.
I
So
mean, yeah.
we'll be on board with that.
I think like the best, I guess, comp would be what Robert Thomas did in 18-19, right? The issue, the difference is that there was so much more around him that
Yeah.
allowed him to be in that spot in an okay hidden in plain sight, right? Even on that line, I mean, that line was such a difference maker in the playoffs with Maroon and Bozak. So it's a little different from that perspective, but like we see what Thomas is now. And we see where he started, and that's your reminder to not, overestimate what Dvorsky could be able to do if he is in the NHL next year.
All right, last thing in the net front before we let Matt get off. Jordan Kyrou cleaning up his stats. He's been almost right at a point per game in the post-Parubi era. Cleaned it up. Now he's not doing it very with consistency, but his aggregate numbers with these garbage time goals at the end, he's cleaning it up.
Yeah, and he's actually been pretty good in the last few weeks. I mean, I know he gets a lot of flack from the fan base for going up and down and things like that. Like it has been, and that's absolutely something consistency that fans should want from players. But the fact is that he's been one of their best players in the last few weeks, pretty much ever since that game in Ottawa where he has a 3-point night. He follows it up with a hat trick in Minnesota. He's got 15 points in his last 10 games. And that was something that I remember you and I talked about maybe a few weeks ago with you know, what is back when we thought that they were dead coming back from Boston after that. Remember when they were dead coming back after Boston, when they were dead after losing to Vegas, when they died after San Jose, and here we are going into game 80 and they're holding the sign. What's the Monty Python where, you know, bring out your dead, but the guy's saying, I'm not dead.
Not dead yet.
That's the Blues right now. They're that guy. But when we talked about a few weeks ago, what would be a good finish to the season for St. Louis? And one of the things that I mentioned was get Jordan Kyrou going a little bit more. We've seen what Robert Thomas has done this season. And even though he went through a dry spell himself, he's looking, you know, back to normal. And with Kyrou, you can get him looking like a player for next year. That would be good. And he's done that. He's done that so far. And the thing that Drew Bannister has pointed out recently is that he looks competitive. He's competing on pucks. He's competing in battles. He's skating to open ice. He's doing all the things that the coaching staff has asked him to do. And that's, I can see from a fan's perspective, it is maddening, because why can he do it sometimes and why can he not do it the other times? But in the end, he still leads the team in scoring in a down year, right? This is a down year for him, and he's still their top goal scorer. So stuff to like from Kyrou recently, and it's just about bringing that consistently into next year.
All right, that's Matthew DeFranks. I've been Jeff Gordon. This has been the Net Front Presence. A reminder, you can get all of our podcasts, all of our video, all of our extra content that's not in our fine print edition. You can get all that on stltoday.com if you're hearing us from your favorite podcast app. Until next time, for Matt, I'm Jeff. See ya.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.